Good to go. Thank you. I'll take a picture of you guys. Are you guys ready? All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to start the candidates forum now for 4th District Supervisor. And I want to welcome you and thank you all for being here. Nipomo always shows up, and you've shown up in force, and we thank you very much. It's really important that the candidates have the opportunity to have their voices heard so that you, the voters, can make the decision that you feel is best in your opinion. My name is Jacqueline Frederick. I'm a local attorney here in Nipomo, but more importantly tonight, I am president of Latino Outreach Council. And Latino Outreach Council is very proud to co-host this debate with the League of Women Voters. The League of Women Voters has been doing this for 100 years almost, and they are nationally trained. So the way that the debate will go forward is the way that we have done every single debate. And it is consistent with the League rules. So this evening, we will be presenting your questions to the candidates. Most of you were handed, those of you that wanted one, a little 3x5 card. All the questions are on 3x5 cards, even those that were submitted in some other way. Again, following League rules. The questions are being sorted according to category of topics, because we don't want to have 10 questions in a row of the same question. So that is what the sorters do. They also do sort out any profanity, insulting language, things like that that might come up. Each candidate is going to have the opportunity to answer the same question. And each candidate is going to have the opportunity to answer a question first. And I control that. The readers we have here this evening, who I'll introduce in a minute, these are folks who have kindly volunteered to simply read the questions that are asked. These will not be their questions. They're going to be reading the questions that are on the 3x5 cards, and we thank them for their volunteer efforts. I want to tell you just a little bit about Latino Outreach Council. So we are a nonprofit organization that has been around since 1994. And our goal is bridging cultures and educating Latinos about the resources that are available to them in the community, helping them to feel integrated into the community that they live in, San Luis Obispo County, let them know what resources are available to them. And, of course, that means making Spanish language access available to them as well. We hold numerous educational forums throughout the year, in addition to the candidates' forums, on issues of education, immigration, and health, and sometimes other topics that come up that are of interest. We also have scholarships. We have scholarships for college-bound students, and we also have scholarships for Latina Leadership Conference in Sacramento. We hold a town hall meeting every month, which, if you pick up this card out, you'll have more information about our mission, but our meetings are the second Thursday of every month from 8:30 to 10 at the County Government Center, and we always have amazing speakers. It goes by really fast, and people always want to come back. Our goal is civic discourse, along with that of the League of Women Voters. I know that all of you who are here, or most of you that are here, already support a particular candidate one way or the other. Some of you are here because you haven't made up your mind. This is being televised tonight. It's also being aired live on SlowSpan, slowspan.org. So if you want to text your friends, they can hear it live streaming. It will also be replayed on public channel television, which I believe is channel 21. And I want to thank AGP Video for once again videotaping this debate for us again tonight. And it will be replayed over and over again on a loop until Election Day. So what these candidates have to say is important because there will be a lot of other people who maybe are not supporting a particular candidate who want to be informed and who will learn a lot tonight about each of the candidates. On the issue of civil discourse, and I touched on this briefly, this is a book that the League of Women Voters follows. It's about how to put on civil candidates' forums. So I know some of you have signs for one candidate or the other or both. We ask you not to hold up any signs, to be respectful. Somebody here is wearing a pin, and it says, love, empathy, respect. I thought that's a good theme for a candidate's debate, love, empathy, and respect. So hopefully that's what we'll do here tonight and give both these candidates an opportunity to be heard. I just wanted to mention that we do have another candidates forum scheduled for next Wednesday evening, and that's going to be held at the County Government Center, and that will be the two races, one for district attorney and the other for tax assessor. It starts at 5:30 as well and will run to 8. I also wanted to let you know that by agreement with both of the candidates, tonight's forum is going to end at 7:30. Which I think will be fine because we're in a very warm room this evening. Okay, what we're going to do, each candidate by toss of the coin has determined who is going to go first for their 3-minute opening statement and their 3-minute closing statement. After that, the questions will be posed to the candidates and they will each have 1 minute to respond to a question. We do have Vera Wallen here, who she's raising her hand. She is our timer, and she has some nice plaques to hold up for our candidates to give them plenty of warning. All right. Okay, you go first, right? So, by coin toss, Mr. Paulding will give his first opening statement. Thank you. Welcome. Oh, let's give them a hand. Let's do it. That's out of your system. So, I will ask you to refrain from clapping at the end of their answers. Let's wait till the very end of our evening where we can all give them another incredible round of applause for being willing to serve us, the public. Thank you. All right. Thanks, Mr. Paulding. Go ahead.
Thank you, Jackie. And thank you to the Latino Outreach Council and the League of Women Voters and to all of our panelists for being here today. Importantly, thank you to everyone for being here. This is really important for us all to participate in our democracy. And one of the most rewarding aspects of campaigning thus far has been getting people together in rooms to talk about the issues. And it means a lot. So I think that the most important question we have to ask today is, are we any better off than we were 4 years ago when the incumbent took office? We have to ask ourselves that question because it's important. Do we have a long-term water solution? Is traffic congestion any better? Do we have more park spaces to enjoy here in Napomo? Is our air any cleaner and are our streets any safer? I think that the answer to that question is no. Now, I bring 10 years of experience working as a project planner and a project manager to this position. I've worked on projects for Kings County, Butte County, Del Norte County, the state of California, the city of Santa Monica, and our very own Slo County. I've worked on water and wastewater treatment, county airports, county roads, county jails. And in all of my experience, I've seen counties that operate well, that are functional. And I've also seen those that are dysfunctional and toxic. And ours is the most toxic and dysfunctional I've ever seen. I'm running because I want to bring unity to the board, and I want to make our board functional so it can focus on the issues and do its job. Now, I'm the only one sitting here that can actually say that I'm from here. This is my hometown. South County is my hometown. I love this place, and I want to serve this community. It's very important, as you listen to the incumbent, for you to think about your own personal observations of what you see when you drive around in a Pomo, in terms of potholes, in terms of traffic congestion. When you look at Oceano, for example, and the sidewalks that aren't there, or the flooding problem, you have to ask yourself, have we made progress? Because you're going to hear a long list of things. But what's important to keep in mind is your own personal observation of what you see. I appreciate everyone being here today. I did forget to mention that I'm also a California licensed attorney, and I bring that skill set to the board as well. So thank you for being here today, and let's let the games begin.
Ms. Compton.
Good evening. Can you hear me? Good evening. Thank you, Jackie, Latino Outreach, and the League of Women Voters for hosting this event tonight. I'm pleased to be here tonight and have been your supervisor since 2015. During my time in office, we've accomplished a lot of important things together. Local government is where the rubber meets the road, and we make important decisions that affect the daily lives of every individual in this community. The county provides many services for individuals who depend on us, so we need to get it right. I ran for office in 2014, and I promised to protect the working families in our community. As a taxpayer and small business owner, it's one of the things that motivated me to run for office. We've faced many challenges in the last 3.5 years. I'm proud to come here with a track record and a list of accomplishments we have in fact accomplished. In the last 3.5 years, we've successfully navigated through a huge mandate, that of the sustainable management of our groundwater. We've managed 6 basins in this county, 2 of which are in my district, and successfully prevented the state from coming in and taking over control. We wanted to keep local control, despite 2 supervisors inviting the state to come in. We've done this without any additional cost to your pocketbook, and yes, I have the numbers and facts with me. We've made strides in affordable housing and progress with our most chronically homeless. We've made significant changes in our jail and mental health departments with people and processes. We're preparing for the closure of the Diablo Canyon power plant and how it will affect our economy. We've protected Prop 13 and the 2/3 majority required to raise your taxes. We've prioritized our roads and improved our pavement condition index almost 10 points in Napomo and in Oceano and the rest of the county. We've fast-tracked green projects, workforce housing, and put together an oak tree ordinance that protects our quality of life here. We opened a new passenger terminal with new airports and new flights to support our business community. We formed a tourism marketing district to bring more tourists to our county. We voted on safety priorities, lowering the crime rates specifically in this area. We've worked to get 3 park projects off the ground in Napomo, despite the fact that $11 million was taken out of South County and put into other districts throughout the years. We've kept department salaries to a minimum, knowing the average income for a family in Napomo is $60,000. We've developed reasonable cannabis regulations. We've opposed community choice aggregation by every measurement that would have raised your energy costs for working families in every scenario we evaluated. We opposed a house tax that had the potential to place a $30,000 fee on every house, then redistribute that to people for their affordable homes. We voted consistently against fee increases. We've moved forward with a behavioral health facility, and our office has handled over 2,000 constituent issues from constituents living in my district. There's no doubt this is a swing vote that will determine the board majority. Many, if not most, of the issues I just talked about were issues that we voted 3-2 on with our current majority. That's why this seat is critical if you like the direction we're moving. My overall goal is to protect stable neighborhoods for all of us, including my working family. I've lived here for 20-plus years, employed people that live in this county, and have been here since he was 7 years old. I want to help shape your community to be the best place to live, work, and grow old, because I intend to do that. That's why I'm running for a second term. I look forward to answering your questions today.
Thank you. Okay, at this point, I'm going to introduce our readers who have volunteered. We're going to start, if you raise your hand, Natalie. Natalie Schaefer is a Napomo resident. Her husband is a teacher in Santa Maria, and her son is in college at Chico State. Thank you. We also have John Denno, who is the Napomo High School principal. Thank you so much for letting us use this facility. We appreciate it. He's currently in his 4th year at Napomo High and previously served as a high school principal for 5 years in Madera County. He is an Air Force brat and former Marine. John and his wife, Jill, have an 8th grade daughter, Piper, and a kindergarten son, Hudson. Thank you for volunteering today. And Anita Schauer. Many of you know Anita. She is an inveterate community volunteer, an author, an etiquette consultant, otherwise known as Miss Etiquette. And she is a doctoral candidate, still always learning, at Grand Canyon University. And thank you once again for volunteering to help your community. So let's give them a round of applause for thanking them to volunteer. So, Natalie, we're going to start with you, and you are going to pose your first question to Ms. Compton, and then Mr. Paulding will respond to the same question.
What do you consider your strengths and your weaknesses?
Oh, okay, my strengths and my weaknesses. I'll start out with my strengths. I think I get things done. I think I'm proactive. I think that's evidenced by the 2000 constituent issues we've handled. I think I'm not afraid to take on an issue. And I think I work well with people that are civil to me. My weaknesses, I'm impatient. I come and look at things from a perspective of small businesses where everybody gets together, solves things. It's not quite like that on the board. We have to do things with Brown Act regulations, so things are drudged out in front of everybody, which is good and bad. It makes it difficult to come to some consensus in a quick and efficient manner. But I think impatience is probably one of my weaknesses.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
I'd like to respond to the Brown Act comment. The incumbent made the same comment the other day on Dave Congleton, essentially said that one of the reasons she can't get along with other board members is because of the Brown Act, that it restricts your ability to actually interface with other members. You can still talk with one other board member outside of the meeting, you just can't meet with three. And that trust and that communication is very important to establish behind the scenes so you can actually get something done while on the board. When I look at what my strengths are, I bring a collaborative spirit to the position of county supervisor. That has been my success in my experience as a project manager, bringing people together to actually solve problems. That's what we need. If I'm going to look at my weakness, it would probably be the fact that I haven't held office before. But what I tell folks is that I've worked for Slo County, Butte County, Kings County, Del Norte County, the state of California, and the city of Santa Monica, and I understand the process of county government. I understand the process of government. And those are the skills that I bring to the table.
Thank you. John, your question for Mr. Paulding.
How can we have more workforce housing?
Workforce housing is a very important issue, something that I've struggled with. I have friends and family that have struggled with it. Recently, a friend of mine, or actually a relative of mine, a nurse, had to move away because she couldn't afford the cost of living here. What we need are supervisors that actually want to put the working people first instead of special interests and developers. Now, I haven't accepted a dime from developers, and my opponent can't say the same. Which means that when I'm making decisions with regard to our housing policy, I'm making them unencumbered. I support the Inclusionary Housing Ordinance, which essentially says that we're going to charge a fee on developers, which then goes into a pot of money that nonprofit builders use to construct low-income housing. That's something I support and that my opponent has labeled a tax, saying that it's a tax on first-time home buyers, when it's not. It's a fee that hundreds of other jurisdictions in the state of California use. I'm also very interested in implementing other creative ideas, for example, accessory dwelling units. I think the county should have a program. They already have one, but they should improve that program and incentivize accessory dwelling units to make them affordable for homeowners.
Ms. Compton.
So I don't believe local governments make homes. They don't build homes. I'm not quite sure why we want to demonize the building industry because those are the people that build the homes that we want built. We just came off of a housing summit that all the key thinkers in the community participated in. And basically, the policies that prevent us from creating more homes here are streamlining our processes and policies, reducing fees, and simplifying zoning, things which we've done since I've been on the board. We do have a lack of affordable homes here, but it has to pencil for the developer. They're not going to come into a community if it takes them 5 years to get a project through. If we fight them on every aspect of the project before they even stick the first shovel in the ground, we need some CEQA reform in our county and statewide. But this isn't just a problem in San Luis Obispo. All over the state, especially the coast, you have this problem. I am opposed to a fee or a tax that you put on a home to create other homes for other people. There's nothing in my book that I can think of that putting a tax on something creates more of it. It just doesn't happen in my book. The county has put money into affordable homes. We gave $4.4 million in grants to low and middle income projects this year, $1.4 million to People's Self-Help, and a $1 million TEMA grant for mental health clients that are in low income situations.
Ms. Compton, we'll have more questions.
Your
time's up. Yeah.
She's got a little bit bigger.
Okay.
Maybe yell if I'm... Yeah. There you go.
No problem.
Okay.
Anita, your question for Ms. Compton.
Yes, thank you. What is your plan to create a communicative, collaborative, slow county board of supervisors?
A communicative, collaborative. Look, there's a lot said about the ability our board has to get along or not get along. That's not why I was elected to office. I was elected to represent the people in my district, and the thoughts and values and feelings of the people in my district might be different than they are in another district. I can tell you they're vastly different from the coastal district. When you have one person on the board that is admittedly in the paper said he has psychological issues that cause him to disrupt the board and not be able to get along, it's hard to do to work with that person.
Please no comment, please. Thank you. Did you want to continue? No, you may continue.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I work with everybody that wants to work with me. 90% of the issues in the district we agree on, the consent agenda, et cetera. There are some contentious issues, I mentioned them all before, that we're going to have heated debate on. It doesn't bother me to have heated debate or discussion.
Mr. Pauling.
My opponent specifically said that collaboration was not why I was elected to office, right? Now, I want to just take a moment to look at the county's own organizational values. What you see integrity. What's number two? Collaboration. Three, professionalism. Four, accountability. And five, responsiveness. Now, I've seen with my own eyes instances where the incumbent has attended community advisory meetings here in Napomo, South County Advisory Council meetings, where she has berated her own people, the people that volunteer their time to work as advisory council members. And I've talked with those people that have felt offended. It's not collaborative. It doesn't get us anywhere. And all of the skills and experience that I bring to this job are planning and building, right? I've had to work to get permit approvals with regulatory agencies. I've had to work to settle disputes with general contractors in the field. Bringing people together is what I do. It's my experience. It's one of the reasons I went to law school, because I wanted to become a professional mediator and arbitrator, having worked in mediation and arbitration as well. So we need somebody that will commit to a collaborative spirit for us to get things done, and that's me.
Okay, Natalie, your question for Mr. Paulding.
Do you believe county pensions are sustainable and being managed correctly?
The pension problem is a huge issue, not only for our county, but it is for the cities here and in California in general. It's definitely something that we have to keep an eye on, and as most probably know, we have a process right now where county employees actually have to pay in to reducing those pension liabilities. What folks don't know is that in our county, we're actually better off because we're not on the CalPERS system. We have the pension trust fund. So what's important to keep in mind is that as we're, as elected officials, balancing the budget, we're always trying to work toward putting money there to decrease that liability. But it isn't something that should be used, in my opinion, as a divisive issue to essentially always criticize public employees, who are the very people that serve the public. And with my skills and experience, I want to provide the leadership we need for the county to make the county function better and to provide better customer service.
Ms. Compton.
Our pension debt is about $560 million, which is about the same size as our budget. It's pretty big, and I'm uncomfortable with the debt size that big. We have paid down in two different instances in the last 2 years some of our bond debt. Until the year 2022, we're kind of in a tenuous position, and the bond debt increases, and then it's fully funded by 2040. We do have a tiered pension plan. There's three tiers. Our pension problem is not necessarily the pension, it's the tiers and the people that that are in Tier 1, and we have over 50% of the people now in Tier 1. Most of that $560 million of pension debt is because unions used to be able to negotiate retroactivity, which is now illegal according to PEPR, which was the Pension Reform Act. So over half of that debt, that $560 million, is because retroactively people negotiated pensions back. We've lowered our assumption rate to 7.1%, and getting more people into Tier 1 as they hire on will help us a lot. But we are in better shape than most counties.
John, your question for Ms. Compton.
The Oceano Dunes riding area brings in millions of dollars a year to our local economy, yet certain residents complain about the blowing sand. How would you find a solution that makes everyone happy?
Well, first of all, there was a settlement that was negotiated last week, and that really is going to take a lot of the decision-making out of the process. And it was negotiated between state parks and our APCD, Air Pollution Control District. Both sides agreed to it. It isn't necessarily binding, but if either side decides not to play fair, then it goes back to the drawing board and goes back to the hearing board. But basically, both sides agreed to a plan to reduce the dust and PM10 and PM2.5 within 5 years by 50%. That was agreed upon by both sides, and that's what we'll be moving forward. I have full faith and confidence that things will be better now that we have some new people in charge at both state parks and at the APCD as we move forward.
Mr. Paulding.
So we've had air quality here on the Central Coast that has been rated the most or the worst air quality in the nation at times. And what we've had is a supervisor that hasn't given the issue or the people whose health is affected negatively the time of day. She spoke to a recent agreement that was reached between the state parks and the Air Pollution Control District. But what you didn't hear her mention is any involvement whatsoever in actually bringing those parties to the table to get something done. She's been on record previously denying the science that there is actually a correlation between the dust that's emitted from the riding area and the pollution that people are breathing. We need somebody that won't challenge the science, A, and two, will actually agree to work towards resolution. I have been on record from the beginning, since I ran my campaign, essentially saying we need reasonable dust mitigation. I don't want to close down the dunes. I want to see that we protect the public health. And that means planting vegetation, letting riding occur around those areas, and bringing down the amount of dust. And that's essentially what this deal is that she spoke to is, and it's something I support. And it's something that I will advocate for as a supervisor.
Thank you. Anita, your question for Mr. Paulding. Yeah, it's your turn next. Anita's going to ask you the next question.
In light of huge fires, do you think, as is the case with many small fire departments, the department is going broke, and how can you solve this? The follow-up question, crime is up. What can we do?
So recently, the board made a unanimous decision to take on the Cayucas Fire Department, make that a part of the CAL FIRE operation. And that was a decision that was supported by the incumbent and every other supervisor. What's important right now is that we acknowledge that we are understaffed and we don't have the facilities we need to protect ourselves. Just look at the Thomas Fire, for example. We're dealing with the same issue in Oceano. We have a joint powers authority or agreement that ensures that the city of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and the Oceano Community Services District pitch in money to fund a shared an operation that is now in jeopardy because there isn't funding. So I believe that it is incumbent upon the county to ensure that we do not see reduced levels of service or emergency response times because we don't have the facilities we need or the staffing that we need. And it's certainly something that I'm interested in working towards when on the board.
So we have several different fire districts coming to the board right now that can't survive. Their mandates are being increased, the regulations put down on them, and the training is being increased, and they're having a hard time, especially if they're volunteer fire departments. They're having a hard time keeping their volunteers, too. So two of them are coming before the board. Cayucas already came before the board, wanted to disband, and Templeton is next. The Five Cities Fire Authority down here is facing similar problems, as are they throughout the entire county. We've asked for a comprehensive review to be brought back to the board at the county to look at what we need to do. In terms of most of my constituents, they don't feel like they should pay an extra tax for having basic services like fire. They feel like they pay enough in taxes and they don't want to pay for that additional service, but they don't want to decrease their level of service. In terms of crime being up, so crime is down in this district. It's actually down in this district, and I have the statistics I can go through with you. There are a lot of different things we've done. We've added sheriff personnel. We've added a citizen team. We've added a CAT team with two extra officers. And every major police and fire department has endorsed me this year.
Natalie, your question will now go to Ms. Compton.
What are your opinions on marijuana growing and sale in the county and in Napomo?
My opinions on that takes more than a minute. So look, we were faced with going forward. The people voted on the cannabis, and I think we've put some reasonable regulations in place to go into this cautiously. I would call them conservative. We did not open it up full-blown. Some people wanted that. We chose not to. It actually affects the people in Napomo probably more so than any other place because we have all the nurseries down here. Many of the nurseries want to convert over to cannabis. It's more profitable. I feel like we've taken a reasonable approach, not knowing what the consequences are going to be. There are going to be additional personnel we have to add, additional sheriff deputies, additional costs to our health and human services department. So we have a reasonable tax that I think we've put on it too. But we're going forward cautiously with about 141 permits in the district. And I guess that covers it.
Mr. Paulding.
Cannabis regulation is a land use issue, and my skills and experience in land use planning directly relate to how our county should address this particular issue. What we need is to ensure that we don't have incompatibilities of land uses, right? Just like you wouldn't site a sewage treatment plant next to a school, you shouldn't have a cultivation operation next to a school or next to residential neighborhoods where you're going to deal with odor issues or safety issues. And I'd like to take a moment to correct a statistic that my opponent mentioned. According to our sheriff's own website, crime has gone up 400%, in fact. And I also double-checked that with the California Crime Database, so I'm not sure where she's getting her statistics. In addition, she mentioned that she's somehow contributed to us having a gang task unit formed, as well as a team that is dedicated to reaching out to homeless. And what I understand is that those officers have actually been reassigned to other patrol duties because we are short 20 sheriff's deputies. We are down 20 sheriff's deputies in this county. How can we be any safer when we're expected to have a level of service that is two deputies that are supposed to patrol the entire areas of Oceano and Napomo?
John, your question for Mr. Paulding.
What would you do regarding fracking in this country, county?
Fracking is something that we need to look at from a water standpoint. We have a scarcity of water in our community, and we haven't had the leadership we need from our county supervisors, and specifically my opponent, to actually get us where we need to be. The fracking initiative that is circulating is something that is intended to ensure that our groundwater is protected, that we're not injecting chemicals into our groundwater. And it's something that I support. Now, when I look at the lack of leadership with regard to water, I point out a couple different things. Number one, there's 3,000 acre-feet of water that we could be getting from the city of Santa Maria, but we can't because the county of Santa Barbara has imposed a permit restriction on us. My question is, why haven't we? It's something that I will work to do and, again, bring my collaborative spirit and negotiating skills to the table to ensure that we can bring in that water that the Supplemental Water Project pipeline of 3,000, actually of 6,000 acre feet, could be used to bring in an additional 3,000 acre feet.
Ms. Compton.
So I'm assuming fracking will be on the November ballot. There is a proposition or a resolution that's gone through the community, and I understand they've submitted their signatures last week. I haven't seen how many they submitted, but I'm assuming it will make it on the November ballot. We have the choice to either adopt it at that time or put it on the ballot. This fracking issue has just come up all of a sudden. We don't frack in this county.
Okay. All right. Time out. Remember, love, empathy, respect. I'm sure you can all restrain yourself from making comments and allow the candidates to speak their piece, whether you agree with it or disagree with it. Thank you. You may resume, Ms. Compton.
So we don't frack in this county. This county doesn't have the geology to frack in it. We have the Monterey Shale, but Mother Nature has already broken it up and fracked it. It's not something we're going to do in this county. This issue came up right before I got on the board, and the last board unanimously, including Supervisor Hale and Supervisor Gibson, said this is an issue that isn't a real issue in this county, and that happened like a month before I got on the board. So I understand some people want to make it a political issue, but we don't frack in this county.
Okay. Anita, your question for Ms. Compton.
Yes, thank you. How would you protect the rural character of South County?
Well, that's one of the reasons I moved here, for the rural character of South County. I think it has to do with looking at future development. You can't put development in where you don't have the resources. We don't have the resources here. We're in an adjudicated water basin. We pull most of our water up from either groundwater or from Santa Maria via the pipeline, which is not fully completed, but that's where we're getting our water source. And you can't grow if you don't have the resources and infrastructure. So I think that protects the rural character that we have and all love here. But it has to do with looking at where development is going to go and putting it in places where you have that and not putting it in places where you don't have that. I don't think anybody in Napomo wants us to be a stack and pack community like the state is pushing down on us. They want communities to be close to rails or close to communities. People that live in Napomo, including myself, don't want that. We like the rural feel and character of our neighborhoods down here.
Mr. Pauley.
So, like the incumbent mentioned, the state is pushing down on us because of affordable housing. And if we don't meet our mandated affordable housing goals, the state will actually let developers apply for a permit and bypass local government. This means we need to get our act in order. And it also means that one of the ways that we should utilize is the inclusionary housing ordinance that I spoke to earlier that the incumbent is up against. So how can she say that, you know, she doesn't support the inclusionary housing ordinance without providing alternatives as to actually how we're going to meet that affordable housing goal? You know, like I said before, there are hundreds of municipalities that use that as a tool. Speaking of rural character, I grew up here. I love this place. Back in 2007, when I was studying city and regional planning at Cal Poly, I worked on a plan that involved extensive interaction with the public. In fact, here at Napomo High, we held a community workshop to talk about the vision for Napomo. And what I recall from that plan and the development of that plan was essentially that folks like the rural character. They want to keep it that way. But at the same time, we have places like Old Town that are underutilized, that could be revitalized downtowns, that could look a little bit more like the AG Village. And again, what you have to keep in mind is I'm going to bring that city and regional planning skill set to help revitalize our communities. And I'm not bought out by developers like my opponent.
Thank you. Thank you. Natalie, your question for Mr. Paulding.
Do you have a plan for homelessness and how to fund it?
Homelessness is a very, very important issue. And when you look at South County specifically, you have to look at everything that we're already doing and give credit to that to where it's due. The Five Cities Homeless Coalition, which is operated by Jana Nichols, is doing a great job. And they need more funding, and they need more housing. When I sat down with her and listened for 2 hours as to what our needs are, it comes down to that, which means we have to make those funding priorities. Now, where are we going to come up with additional funds? Well, we need to get thinking innovatively. And I've been working with a Harvard lab to look at a project that's currently being implemented by the city of Santa Clara and Denver, Colorado, which is called Pay for Success, where you get private investors to put forward the capital you need to fund the services and the housing that can then go to house and serve the homeless population. And this is something that costs no extra dollars to the taxpayer. You can read more about it on my website, jimmypaulding.org, on the issues page.
Ms. Compton.
So we are starting the construction of 40 Prado in San Luis Obispo. The county gave a $500,000 donation, the largest donation to that. That is the homeless service center. Most of the homeless are up in San Luis Obispo as a general population number. That will have a detox center. We have the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, which does a great job. I've never seen Mr. Paulding volunteer at one event, and I'm at all of them. They do case management, partner with Good Sam, and do a warming center. We have Transitions Mental Health, the Department of Veterans Affairs, HSOC, CAPSLO, ECHO, and the food bank. The population counts in this county have gone down. Every 2 years, we're mandated by HUD to do population counts. 2 years ago, the number was 1515 for homeless in this county. At the 2017 count, it was down to 1125. We've started and funded a program called 50 Now, where we target the top 50 most chronically homeless individuals, and we just signed a $1.9 million contract with Transitions Mental Health to continue that program and help those. We have CAT teams, CalWORKs, and lots of grants that go pay for those types of programs, too, within the community. So we're making progress in the homeless population.
Okay. John, your question will go to Ms. Compton.
What is your vision for South County?
My vision for South County is a place where people can live, they can raise their kids, and grow up in a community that I enjoy and moved here for. I moved here 20 years ago. It's changed drastically. We have more traffic and things like that, and we want to keep the rural nature. I want the crime rates to be low. They have gone down, and I'll tell you the calls since that was brought up before. Since I took office, the calls went down from 16,000 to 15,157 a year, and the reports have gone down, the written reports have gone down from 3,273 to 2,805. So we want lower crime. We want a good education system for our kids, and we just want to grow up and kind of be left alone and do our own thing in South County.
Mr. Paulding.
I'd like to just make a note that call volumes and the numbers, whether they increase or decrease, is not actually an indicator of whether crime, property crimes or other types of crimes are being committed in any less volume. So my vision for South County is essentially to create a safe place, a prosperous community, a livable community, and a well-governed community. And what we don't have right now is a well-governed community. If you look at the county's own website and their mission statement, it says, under a well-governed community, the county will provide high-quality, results-oriented services that are responsive to community desires. I do not believe that our county has that in the incumbent in terms of their elected official, somebody that's approachable, that they can bring their issues to, that listens to them, and ensures that we have good governance.
Anita, your question will go to Mr. Paulding.
Yes, thank you. Who has given you the most money in your campaign? How much have you spent?
The most money, the single largest donor has been the public. So I've raised over $250,000, right? Some of you are probably thinking about the Holland family donation, right? It was $40,000. But $210,000 has been from the community. And that has been an overwhelming indicator that they support change. They support somebody that wants to bring leadership to our community, somebody that has vision, somebody that's working toward a renewable energy future for our community, not offshore oil, not fracking, not oil drilling on the Carrizo Plain. And what you'll hear from the incumbent too often is that we don't have to worry about it. It's not an issue. She said it earlier about fracking. But what if it becomes an issue? You know, with offshore oil drilling, we had a period of time we could comment to the federal government. We could say, we don't want it. Well, that period was skipped. And then after that, with a change of heart, the incumbent said, oh, well, I'm for some type of resolution to indicate to the federal government that we don't want offshore oil. Well, if you look at the second provision in that resolution, it said we welcome the federal government to develop an offshore energy plan.
Thank you, Mr. Paulding.
Look, I don't believe in wasting government resources if nobody's even come forward to want to do something. I've raised, I think we're at about $270,000 right now. Most of mine is from individual contributors under $100. I would say if I had any big donations, I've had a couple of $5,000 donations. I believe one was from the Carpenters Union. I believe one was from a husband and wife, Nick Cook, that I've known for years, and Jason Papich and his wife, who live in my district and are interested in the roads. I have not taken any money from oil, as is the accusation, or drillers or anything like that. And that's where my donations come from. It was a lot of people that contributed to me before, a lot of people that realized there are a lot of things at stake in this election, and most of them are pretty small contributions, like I said.
Natalie, your question for Ms. Compton.
Should the county have approved 100 new homes in Trilogy when we have a water shortage?
Okay, so the county did not, there was a recent vote by the board, and it wasn't to approve 100 new homes. Trilogy and the Woodlands had a master plan that was developed 20-plus years ago. There was a last phase of development that was, I think it was about 132 homes to come forward to the county. There was an appeal by a neighbor that lived next to Trilogy. He's appealed every project in Trilogy that's come forward, and he wanted to stop the progress of those last homes being built, and we denied the appeal, so they went forward and built those homes. Trilogy and the developers there have completely paid for 100% use of the water as if full build-out. So to stop them, if we would have said no and gone with granting the appeal, we would have taken away a vested right that was vested and granted to them 20 years ago. So there was no decision to approve no homes. It was to deny an appeal to continue and finish out the subdivision, which was the last phase, which they are currently starting on now and finishing out.
Mr. Paulding.
So we need to analyze water, right, every time we look at a particular project before the board. And what you want is a supervisor that's making those decisions on projects based on merit, not based on contributions that have come to their campaign. The project we were just specifically talking about involved an $11,000 contribution to the incumbent, where she was essentially called out at a Board of Supervisors meeting during public comment as having taken all that money, and it was noted that that was a perceived conflict of interest, that under those circumstances, the right thing to do, the ethical thing to do, was to recuse yourself. Now, she didn't do that, even though months back, when another project was before the board where she received $1,000 over the Ontario Ridge Trail, or $1,500, somewhere around there, she said, I wouldn't want to vote on this because there's an appearance of conflict, and I want to avoid the appearance of impropriety. Now, you have to ask yourself, why did she approve that project? Well, it's not only the case that she received the $11,000, it's also the case that she had worked out a specific deal with that developer to negotiate.
Thank you. Your time's up. The next question from John to Mr. Paulding.
Where can we see who has endorsed you?
You can go to my website, the endorsements page, and the most notable endorsement is the endorsement by the SLO County Employees Association. Over 1,700 people are a part of that organization. And the reason they endorse me is for this reason. They state on their website, the partisan gridlock on the Board of Supervisors has had a direct and negative effect on the county and the 1,700 plus employees that SLO SIA represents. Immediate change to the County Board of Supervisors is needed in order to return the county to a state of civil discourse on important issues. SLO SIA believes Jimmy Paulding will bring rational and nonpartisan decision-making to the Board of Supervisors. And this is exactly my commitment. Under our state constitution, it says local elected officials are supposed to be nonpartisan. Fixing potholes should not be a partisan issue. And our board has become so divided and so toxic because of people like the incumbent, that our ability to truly tackle community issues is hindered.
Thank you. Ms. Compton.
So my endorsements are all on my website. You can go to it, and it's lynncompton.com. I have been endorsed by the Aurora Grandy Police Officers Association, Chief Annabali, who just retired, Cal Fire, almost all the past supervisors in this district for sure, Assemblyman Cacho Asagi and Ruth Brackett, current supervisors, Debbie Arnold, past supervisor Frank Meacham. I've been endorsed by many mayors that are current and past. I've been endorsed by over 1,000 people that are on my website right now that are just regular average people in the district. Almost half of them are small business owners that understand how difficult it is to do business in this county. I will make one comment about the endorsement that Mr. Paulding has, and I actually saw three endorsements on his websites, one from the Sierra Club, two unions, and SLO SIA. SLO SIA is the largest negotiating union with our county right now. The last 2 years, they've got a 7% raise, 2 years. Right now, we're going into very difficult discussions because they're not happy with what they got last year, and they want more right now. So I think you can figure out why they did not endorse me on that.
Anita, your question will go to Ms. Compton.
Yes, thank you. Do you think the county should hold the line on fees and pay raises for their employees?
That's a really good follow-up question to the one we just had. I absolutely do, and it's a question that comes up with every one of our negotiating units, and we go into impasse when we hold the line on it. Right now, we have what we're calling is a brownout in terms of hiring. We have a tough budget this year, so we do have to hold the line. What you see with a lot of these labor negotiating groups right now is there were 7 years of what we had called a pain plan when the economy was bad. So now that we're back at the table, they feel like all those 7 years where maybe they didn't get the raises that they deserved need to be all made up in the next coming up years, and I philosophically disagree with that. The average person in my district has a family income of $60,000. They don't want to see exorbitant raises and pay raises. When you look at some of the heads of our departments, they're making $250,000 and $300,000. I'll tell you, another thing that comes before the board is whether we as members of the Board of Supervisors will take a raise, and I've always said, no, I won't take a raise. I knew what I was getting into when I got this job. So that's one of the things that I think is very important. We have to keep and toe the line on all of our pay raises because the average taxpayer is paying for that.
Mr. Paulding.
So the incumbent speaks of fiscal responsibility, and it sounds good, and it's something that all of us should value. As a project manager, I've always balanced budgets. In fact, every project I've ever managed, including a $45 million airport improvement program for Del Norte County, was achieved on time and within budget. Now, what we really have to ask ourselves, though, is, well, all of that sounds good. Are we focusing on the fact that we're in a deficit year? $8 million in debt under this board's leadership, under the incumbent's leadership. We've had liabilities that range millions of dollars. The Los Osos Sewer Project, over $10 million in liability. The Andrew Holland settlement, over $5 million in liability. The numbers keep going. And when you look at the way that the incumbent voted on water, you'll see that $6 million of our general fund taxpayer dollars were allocated to the fringe areas in the county. And I think that vote was politically motivated to essentially subsidize people that donate to her campaign.
Okay. Natalie, your question for Mr. Paulding.
Much has been said about community choice aggregation. Would you support it or not?
I do support community choice aggregation. It's actually one of the issues that the incumbent and I completely disagree on. She has labeled it as something of socialism, when in fact it's over 14 California counties that have successfully used this type of energy program. It's a way to work towards a renewable energy future for our local economy. It can actually result in enhanced customer choice, local control, expansion of renewable energy portfolios, local economic development, and faster progress toward achieving our community's environmental goals. During an interview between the New Times and the incumbent, she stated that this policy was another bomb from the left. Because she is partisan, so partisan, she can't even continue to focus on studying the feasibility of things like this, and that's why she voted against even continuing to study the feasibility, which is extremely problematic for our community.
Okay, this has come to the board twice. We did go out for a study, and the study came back with 27 jurisdictions that participated. There was a technical memo released in September. Wilden Financial Group did the study, and there was a third-party reviewer. The result of the study were that in none of the 24 scenarios, it showed a feasibility outcome. The program was predicted, quote unquote, to have a negative margin in most years, 2020 to 2040. Quote, given the underperformance of the program and being rate competitive, consistently having negative net margins and failing to meet working capital, the community choice aggregation program is neither reliably solvent or financially feasible. Under the middle of the road scenario, which is 50% renewables, a typical customer in PG&E area, which is us, would experience on average nearly 30% higher generation rates, resulting in an extra $16 charge on the customer's electric bill. It's worse in the other scenarios. Under even some of the aggressive scenarios, it actually increased the greenhouse gas emissions. The rates were higher. You were opted in automatically and had to pull yourself out of the program, and it increased personnel. I absolutely would not support the program.
John, your question will go to Ms. Compton.
park development fees have generated millions of dollars from District 4, but was used elsewhere. What will you do to ensure these fees are used in District 4?
So that was one of the big issues that we faced this year with the, well, it was last year actually with the board. And when we were going ahead with developing the park after the lawsuit was over, I asked where all the money was. And it took the county about 6 months to get back with me with where the money went. We had generated over $11.4 million in fees in South County in a program that's supposed to keep the fees from the building of the homes in the area where they're generated. Those fees and that were collected went outside of this district. It's not exactly by district, but most of them went into the northwest area of this county and did not stay down here. So consequently now, when we figured this out and I brought it to the board, we only had about $1.5 million left in that fund. We did secure that thanks to a 3-2 vote, two supervisors didn't vote for that, to go toward three projects down here at South County. One is getting started on the skateboard park, which is a project that doesn't use water. We're in the design phase of that. We've gotten everybody in the community together to input on that. One is for Jack's Helping Hand, and the other's for the Deanna Adobe to get going and put in a water line on that project.
Mr. Paulding.
So all the projects that the incumbent speaks of are underfunded and incomplete, essentially. So what she just said was that there was, by the time she caught wind of the money being diverted to other districts, there was only $1.5 million out of $11.4 left. So my question is, what was going on for the first 3 years while she was in office? Now, that's something that I will be focused on day one. I've actually applied for grants, $33 million grant, for example, for Kings County, that I was able to get in funds for the county. I have grant funding experience. That's the process that I've gone through in my career, planning, funding, designing, and building community and community projects. And so we need that skill set, someone that, unlike the incumbent, that 3 years into office is on video at the board meeting asking the parks director the question as to whether there could be some state matching funds available, knows the answer, and is actually building those relationships with the state on day one to ensure that we have the matching funds to complete the project. And finally, I'd like to mention that the feasibility study earlier.
Sorry. Your time is up. Sorry. All right. The next question, Anita, will go to Mr. Paulding.
Yes, thank you. What is your plan to improve mental health services in the county jail?
Yeah, what I'd like to mention first is that the community choice feasibility study that was discussed earlier was a tri-county study that didn't apply specifically to our area, which is very problematic that that study would be referred to. It's misleading. Mental health is an incredibly important issue, and it's something that we need to change how we view it in society. We need reform both in our jail and outside of our jail. Now, we've made a lot of progress, and the county has stepped up to the plate through the Stepping Up Initiative, and there's funding going to the right programs, for example, Transitions Mental Health, and we've completed the Crisis Stabilization Unit. But the question is 16 beds or four additional with the Crisis Stabilization Unit enough to treat a population of 280,000 people? Now, what's happened while the incumbent has been on the board is that there have been very serious issues, such as the tragic death of Andrew Holland. And she looked the other way, in my opinion, in terms of doing what was right to ensure transparency and accountability. That's something that I will commit to be transparent and accountable.
There was no lack of transparency with regard to that. So what are we doing at the county? We've made a lot of changes. We're now accepting all inmates with declining mental health from the jail over into, we call it the PUF, the PFF facility. We've hired a physician, Dr. Mokiran, who's going to be our chief medical officer at the jail. We've opened a crisis stabilization unit last month that will reduce our demand on the PUF. We've started a program called the Stepping Up Initiative, which is a national program that we're implementing here, which decreases the amount of people with mental illness in our jails. It decreases the time spent in the jails and them from returning. A new behavioral health unit is opening up that's mostly privately funded. I personally have given a $500 contribution. We've commissioned an outside independent evaluation of our jails and mental health. We've intensified training for our deputies, and we've outsourced jail medical, something that the sheriff has come and asked the board for many years in a row, and the board has turned him down prior to now. So those are the things we've done. I've got a few extra moments. The question came up before, what happened to the money for parks? It was pilfered by the two supervisors that support you. That's what happened to it.
Okay. Oh, Natalie, your question for Ms. Compton.
What do you think are the most pressing concerns for women in your district, and how will you specifically address those concerns?
For women in my district, okay, I kind of look at it as men and women and families in my district. You know, I think affordable housing is a issue here for everybody. I think employment, although we have the lowest employment right now in the Tri-County area, it's the lowest it's been in many, many years, but I still think people are looking for good jobs. They want to stay here. They want spouses that are brought here to find jobs. We've done things at the county in terms of the new airport to allow spouses to come and go if their other spouse has a job here. Safety is a big issue with women in the county. I mean, everybody wants to feel safe. We want our moms to feel safe and our daughters to feel safe. I guess bullying in the schools is an issue, too. I don't want my daughters to be bullied in the local schools. John, it doesn't happen here at Napomo High. And I don't look at it as a woman or a man issue. I just think everybody wants to feel safe and enjoy the community and live comfortably in their community.
Mr. Paulding.
So I recently had the pleasure of sitting down with the staff at an organization in SLO that essentially, it's a nonprofit organization, helps women specifically start businesses. And they do a great job. And I'm wishing that I recalled the name of it because I would be using this as an opportunity to help their PR efforts. There's a lot of important work that needs to be done. In fact, when you look at statistics, 3/4 of women are actually minimum wage earners, right? So when we talk about pay, we're actually, and improving pay situations, we're proportionately affecting women. One of the things that I'm interested in, based on my background, is ensuring that we have public contracts that encourage minority business enterprise and women's business enterprise businesses. So when we let a contract, for example, to build the sheriff substation that we don't have because of the incumbent's lack of really prioritizing that project, we can ensure that we hire women contractors. And that's something I'm definitely going to advocate for as a supervisor.
John, your question will go to Mr. Paulding.
What could the county be doing to increase economic development in light of the power plant closure?
So Diablo's closure is going to impact our economy in a lot of ways, our schools, our families, our job sectors. And that's where we need somebody that isn't beholden to any particular industry, especially the oil industry, that has a mind towards developing a renewable energy future for our post-Diablo economy. And using the site out at Diablo is definitely something that we can do. Having discussions with PG&E, there are ideas for using their office facilities. They have high-tech cybersecurity spaces. There's linkages that can be made with Cal Poly to bring engineering programs there. We should be studying wind technology, even though it's a little ways out. We could have solar and wave technology is a little ways out. Wind technology is something that we should really move forward there. And again, the Community Choice Energy Program is actually one way to help facilitate that process. So we need leadership there and not people that cite studies that aren't applicable to our particular county.
Ms. Compton.
So Diablo Canyon will be a huge loss to us when it eventually shutters its doors. It's about $1 billion to our economy. They're the largest employer. They're the highest tax provider. A lot of that money goes to the schools, and it will be a loss to our community. Thankfully, we have some time to prepare for that. The things that I do are every single vote that comes before me on the board, regardless of what it is, I look at how is this going to affect our economy, whether it's raising fees for builders, whether it's raising fees for homeowners, whether it's raising fees for people that want to make simple additions to their home, whether it's streamlining things, everything I look at when it comes to the county, I look through that prism. We have the Economic Vitality Corporation that I'm a member of, that I sit on that board. We're looking at having a study commission to bring in other entities into this county to replace that. We have the new airport terminal that will bring businesses in and out. We have a tourism marketing district to increase tourism. We're streamlining and trying to bring new businesses into town to replace that economy, but it's going to be difficult given the vast amount that they contribute to this economy.
Anita, your question will go to Ms. Cox.
Yes, thank you. Are private property rights important and why?
Is it for me? Okay. Of course they're important. It's what our country was founded on, private property rights. That's how you build equity. When you buy a home, you build equity in your home. That's how I started a business, because of the equity in my home that I had built. That's why I'm in favor of things that enhance private property rights instead of detract for them. When you want to put government-subsidized housing where no one can build equity in a home, they never get ahead. I mean, I think most people believe that the biggest asset that we have is our home and the value that has increased over the years. So private property rights are hugely important to me. They're hugely important to most of the ranchers in this community. And I think it will be very interesting if you go to the law school website, that we both went to the same law school, and read a paper that Mr. Paulding put up about how he feels about property rights. It's quite shocking.
Mr. Paulding.
So if we want to talk about property rights, we should talk about what the incumbent has actually done to increase or improve property rights for our community. When I talk to residents of Oceano, they can't build a home addition without paying cost-prohibitive fees for putting in the sidewalk in front of their house. I think, wow, why can't the government actually do something to help incentivize them to improve their homes? We have property values that are being damaged because of unduly restrictive permit requirements. My idea to address affordable housing with regard to streamlining the permitting and approval process for accessory dwelling units is to actually incentivize them by reducing fees. How are we going to reduce the fees? If you agree to incorporate water-reducing requirements, energy-efficient requirements, we're going to reduce your fee. What is that going to do? That's going to improve the value of your property. We should ask ourselves, do we have policies locally that prohibit you from attaching a tiny house or building a granny unit, or incentivize you? And when we actually implement these policies, we're going to have an expanded property rights framework, something that obviously the incumbent hasn't been interested in, although she speaks a good talk.
Natalie, your question for Mr. Paulding.
How do you propose we fund much-needed improvements to our roads and infrastructure?
So this would be a really good opportunity to compare where I stand with the incumbent. We have so many infrastructure improvements that we need, multi-million dollar projects, to really fix Taft, for example, to fix 101, to 101 by Shell Beach, to fix 227. And without monies from the state, monies that are allocated based on SB1, with the current allocation is $261 million. Without those funds, we're not going to be able to address those infrastructure problems. Now, my opponent is against that. She was also against Measure J, which was a half-cent sales tax increase that would have brought in quite a bit of infrastructure funds for our county, and specifically would have allowed us to use state transportation improvement funds that ended up going to other counties, something that's commonly not mentioned, if we would have been able to raise our local money that we would have kept and used locally. So I supported that, and I also support using SB1 funds to actually improve our infrastructure.
So
roads and infrastructure, big issue in this county, whether you're looking at Napomo or countywide. SB1 was not something that came before the board. It was something that the people voted on, and it will probably be on the November ballot again to recall it or not recall it. It was a $52 billion transportation bill, or 19 cents a gallon in gas. It increased the car taxes by $50, and the average family paid $300 more under this regime than before. We already have the highest gas fees per gallon in the nation. The average price of a gallon of gas in Aurora Grande is $3.60. All seven cities have transportation measures. Measure J was a $225 million tax, supposedly for our roads. $22 million went to pedestrian and bike trails, and approximately $22 million went to transit, which is really decreasing throughout the county. It's a regressive tax. I don't believe that we should be asked to have our taxes raised when Sacramento is at a record budget surplus right now and has mismanaged our funds. I don't think you should come back to the taxpayer and say, tax us more so we can do what you should be doing in Sacramento.
John, your question will go to Ms. Compton.
Where do you stand on the sanctuary city law, and what action will you take to support your position?
So we haven't taken any action at the board on the sanctuary city law or lawsuits. There are some cities and municipalities that have chosen to sue. It hasn't been brought before our board. I know you have to follow the rule of law. I'm uncomfortable with the fact that our local law enforcement officials can't communicate with ICE on certain things. It makes it a more dangerous place to live. I don't like that. I want more safety rather than less safety. Whether the county joins the lawsuit or not, I don't know. It's an expensive lawsuit to join. I don't know what the chances are of prevailing or not prevailing right now. But I personally like our law enforcement departments to communicate rather than not communicate.
Mr. Paulding.
So I think that the most important perspective that we need as a community is the law enforcement perspective. And I was recently talking with two sheriff's deputies with SLO County about the practical realities of dealing with our sanctuary city laws or sanctuary state law. And what I learned was that there aren't much. When it comes to the risk associated with releasing criminals from our jails and the fact that there's less coordination with ICE, that risk is mitigated by our own sheriff by posting those releases on our county website. And so instead of the ICE getting a call from our sheriff's deputies saying, hey, we're releasing somebody, they know to actually look there. I think this is a community issue that's used to divide us. It's something that's made partisan when our local county board of supervisors should be focused on getting things done and working together, and the fact that the position is nonpartisan.
Anita, your question will go to Mr. Paulding.
Yes, thank you. What will you do to help small business in South County?
So when I talk about small businesses, I look to the business districts of District 4. I look to the Oceano Business District, for example, and ask myself why it looks the way it does. We have wonderful attractions like the Melodrama, but we don't have a completely revitalized community. And the skills I have, the experience I have, are working on community projects, building relationships, and that's what we need to actually improve those communities. You have to actually put in the infrastructure first, though, in order for you to attract the businesses. And if we look at Old Town, for example, you'll see notes up on the windows of business owners saying they've had to leave because they couldn't make it here. I think that's a testament to what the incumbent has actually done to improve the business climate for small businesses.
Ms. Compton.
Look, I own a small business. I know how difficult it is. We started the business 20 years ago from scratch, mortgaging our house. I know how hard it is to operate a small business in this community. It has a lot to do with taxes and fees. We are taxed and feed to death, regardless of what your small business is. California is the least friendly place to do business, and if you're in a small business, it was just in the Pacific Business Times. I'm trying to bring businesses in. I see one of my constituents standing up in the back of the room, and I don't mean to throw him under the bus. He owns a small business that employs 70 people in Napomo. We are making it so difficult on him to do business and to operate a new facility and build a facility that he's being recruited by Santa Maria and other states to actually give him land. I don't want to lose him. I've worked with businesses such as the Melodrama in Oceano on projects and expanding where they are right now. We're looking to bring some new businesses in actually to Oceano. But it comes down to money. People want to come and if you're a small business, operate in an environment where you can make money, and it's really hard to do that. So everything I vote on, I look at through that prism. I do not ever want increased taxes or fees, and have voted them down consistently for all kinds of projects. And we'll continue to do so in the future because we're not a business-friendly state or community.
Thank you. Natalie, your question will go to Ms. Compton.
What is the status of the new sheriff substation in Napomo?
Did you say status?
Yes.
Okay. The status. Okay, so we talked about Trilogy before as part of the conditions for approval that were granted 20 years ago when the Woodlands was built. There was a condition for a sheriff substation. That condition needed to be satisfied before they went on to their final phase. We talked about that final phase and moving forward with that. There was a lot of ambiguity in the contracts that were written 20 years ago. The sheriff felt like he should have a brick-and-mortar station. The developers felt like they only needed to provide a station and rent it at the current rate, the current market rate. The county and our CAO and the sheriff and the developers got together. No special deal was cut. It's been interesting seeing this whole thing unfold because basically the developer ended up ponying $500,000 up to build a brick-and-mortar station to have outside of Trilogy here on Taft Avenue. And I'm being criticized for the developer coming up with $500,000 because of some special deal that was cut. Never have I heard that a bad deal. It's going to go on Taft Avenue. There's remediation that needs to be done on the ground, but that's where it's at right now.
Mr. Paulding.
So what's important to examine in this particular situation is the facts. And I'd also like to point everybody to my website. I have a page, 10 Reasons Why Not to Vote for Lynn Compton. On that page, you'll see the sheriff's substation is number one because it's a very important issue. When you look at the agreement between the developer and the county, it obligated the developer to provide a 3,000 square foot facility that was to provide 5 office spaces for deputies and 5 parking spaces. Now, subsequent to allegations made by other supervisors against Supervisor Compton in meetings, that she essentially had reduced the obligation of the developer after going to lunch with the developer, we ended up, instead of getting what would be a $1.2 to $1.3 million facility, $500,000. Furthermore, it was that same developer that then subsequently donated over $10,000 to her campaign, and of which project she approved for them. So please do look at my website, look at the facts. You'll see the provision in the agreement that she stated is ambiguous. And let me tell you, too, she's saying that they...
Thank you. I'm sorry, time's up. The next question, John, will go to Mr. Paulding.
Would you make it easier to permit green energy projects?
Yeah. So I'd like to follow up with my last statement. When you look at my website, you'll see that the incumbent has been saying that the developer was obligated to provide zero for the sheriff's substation. And the fact is that they were obligated to provide much more than that. I personally met with them, and they were thinking at least $300,000. So that's misleading. Green energy future. That's what we need. We need to move forward with renewable energy policies that will achieve clean water, clean air, and that will bring us to the point of actually mitigating impacts associated with Diablo's closure. And in order to do that, we need leadership, and we need people with vision. And what you'll get with me is that, working towards something, working toward a future that involves progress, not a future that is regressive and that is, you know, essentially based on oil. I don't want to see offshore oil. I want to see a renewable energy future for our local economy.
Ms. Compton.
So we have streamlined green energy projects. About a year and a half ago, we completely streamlined the project for any green energy project that comes forward and reduced the fees on it. We've streamlined workforce housing projects, and that was actually a 3-2 vote on the board where Gibson and Hill dissented on going forward with workforce housing projects. We've streamlined putting an accessory dwelling unit, we call them ADU or granny quarters, on people's homes. We've approved solar projects. Not one project that I can think of has come to the board where we've approved oil, as he keeps saying. In fact, the last project regarding oil was the rail spur, and that the board turned it down, including me. So I can't think of any other project that we've approved that has to do with oil. But we are moving forward. I think that's the direction the economy is going, and we're being forced to do that by AB 32 and regulations by the state. And it's not called a climate action plan, but we have what's called similar to a climate action plan. So we're being directed in that direction, and we're following it.
Anita, your question will go to Ms. Compton.
Yes, thank you. What solutions do you see going forward for the long-term management of water in San Luis Obispo County?
So we talked about this a little bit earlier. We have been mandated by the state to manage. We have 22 basins to manage our 6 critical basins. I'm actually on the task force and the Groundwater Sustainability Agency for the Cuyama Basin, which is surprisingly the most overdrafted basin in the county, more so than Paso. We have Prop 1 money doing it, and we have project-based and costs. So I want to talk, and I actually have handouts if anybody wants these. The cost to manage the six critical basins, Santa Maria, Cuyama, Paso, Atascadero, Los Osos, and San Luis Obispo, is going to be about $6 million for 5 years. We have grants from Prop 1 money, Paso Robles 1.5, Atascadero 809, and about 5.8 has been received from Prop 1 grants that we just had a press release about last week. There's been talk through this whole campaign that South County is paying for North County water because I've gotten contributions from North County, and that's just not true. Actually, Cuyama Basin is going to cost us $70,000, Los Osos $792,000, Paso Robles $128,000, San Luis $162,000, Santa Maria $463,000, and Atascadero $2,000. So it's a lie to say South County is paying for North County's water when it's going to be net equal and nobody
will
pay.
Mr. Paulding.
I'm sorry, did I go too long?
So to respond to that, the numbers she was citing are talking about the number of property owners or money that went to the various areas. And what's important is you have to look at the number of property owners, not just the dollars. But when we talk about the dollars, I think she just made a statement that she didn't receive contributions from North County grape growers. And it's been thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. Just look at her campaign donor list. And that's why I believe that that vote was politically motivated. What we need, too, is leadership on water. We heard a lot about complying with state law, but what we didn't hear about is how are we going to move forward to actually protect ourselves as a community. And what I'm interested is in essentially four things. One, we need to support our Central Coast Blue Project, which is taking our water that's currently being sent out to the ocean, wastewater, and treating it, injecting it into our groundwater, and then using it. We also need to support gray water. I think that the county could have and should have a robust program to ensure that we're incentivizing property owners to use gray water. In addition, we need to fully explore desal as an option. It's something that I have an experience and skill set that we need. I've worked on projects with the Coastal Commission, which can in some cases be an obstacle to those types of projects.
Thank you, Mr. Paulding. Okay, we have time for maybe two or three more questions. So, Natalie, you'll do your question to Mr. Paulding.
Can you say the Phillips 66 oil train facility is dead, or would you open it up for a new proposal?
I hope that the Phillips 66 oil trains project is dead. And I'd also like to bring to the attention of the public that the incumbent likes to speak of that as her vote against that project, as an example of her taking a step to protect the environment. But what's little known to the public is that her vote didn't matter. It didn't count. And her appointed planning commissioner, Jim Harrison, was the person that was in support of that project the whole way along. And let me tell you why it didn't count. It didn't count because we were in a situation where John Pichon, who was also her former political consultant, had to recuse himself because he had received hundreds of thousands, from Phillips 66 and couldn't vote. So it would have been a 2-2 vote, which would have been not enough to essentially approve the appeal. And so she voted, and I believe that was politically motivated.
So if it was politically motivated and I had some nefarious reason, why wouldn't have I, if it didn't matter, just voted how I wanted to vote then and voted a different way? That just makes no sense to me. You know, I said all along I was going to listen to people. I had maybe not 100, but many meetings while I was running for election with people that opposed the project. I didn't come out in the beginning and say I was opposed to it because I think everybody has their chance, as you say it, in court. And this organization had spent millions of dollars to get there, and I thought it would be unfair if I came out right away and prejudged the project, so I didn't. I eventually voted no on the project due to a lot of reasons. You can go back and listen to the video and my reasoning behind voting no on the project. Do I think that the project is dead? Absolutely. I don't think that Phillips will probably ever go through that again. And all these comments about all the money that I've taken from oil, it's just not there. And if I did, then you would have thought I would have wanted to vote for the project, and I didn't vote for the project. So it's not coming back to my knowledge.
John, your question for Ms. Compton? Okay. Yeah, this will be the last question. Thank you.
What is your greatest weakness in this campaign? And what is your opponent's greatest strength?
Oh. What is my greatest weakness in this campaign? I think it's significantly more difficult to campaign when you're working a full-time job that's more than full-time. So the last time around, I could take a leave of absence. I understand my opponent has taken a leave of absence. It's significantly more difficult to do that. We're walking precincts at night when I'm exhausted, and organizing it is a lot more difficult this time around because I just have less time to do it. What was the second question? What is his strength? He seems like a personable kid. I feel old because I'm old enough to be his mom. He seems personable.
Okay, Mr. Paulding.
So, yeah, I'd like to state for the record that I have a job and I've been working part-time on this campaign. In fact, one of the projects I worked on was the Slough County Airport Terminal. I worked in a behind-the-scenes capacity helping analyze and negotiate disputes and help save county taxpayer dollars, essentially. When it comes to my greatest weakness, as I stated before, I would say the lack of public office. But what we don't want are people that get too good at being politicians. We really want a supervisor that's interested in good governance, and that's what I'm interested in. And so, again, bringing the skills and experience of working with multiple counties and cities to the table is what I think we should value as a community. My opponent's greatest strength, well, I would say... that's a very difficult question, and
it's okay. You don't have to say one if you don't have one.
Well, I'll go ahead and say attending community events. I see her at a lot of events, and I think that's important.
Thank you. Shall we give them both a round of applause? They did a wonderful job. So let me just remind you that we are going to be hosting another candidates forum on this Wednesday night at 5:30 at the County Government Center. Two very important races also, the tax assessor's race and the district attorney's race. So I hope to see you there. And at this time, we'll ask the candidates to give their closing remarks. We'll start with Mr. Paulding.
So...
Great.
Are we started?
Yeah.
Okay. So the question I asked you at the beginning of my opening statement was, have things improved over the last 4 years while the incumbent's been in office? Is our air any cleaner? Do we have a long-term water solution? Have we actually more parks to spend time in? Or, on the other hand, are our projects underfunded and incomplete? I see a lack in vision and a lack in leadership, and that's why I'm running, because I have skills and experience bringing people together. And my opponent has said that I'm young, and there was a mailer that was recently sent out saying that I exaggerate my experience. Now, that's not the case. I've always said I've worked as a planner. I started off doing city and regional planning. That's what I studied at Cal Poly. And for 7.5 years, I worked for Vanner Construction Management. I actually spent 2 years commuting to Tehachapi building a wastewater treatment plant. And from there, I was promoted to project manager and managed projects such as the Kings County Jail expansion, the design of a jail for Kings County. I also managed a $45 million airport improvement program for Del Norte County while I commuted down to law school to Santa Barbara. And so we need someone with those skills and experience, and more importantly, someone that has a desire to work with others, to bring people together, to focus on the issues, and get stuff done. Not partisan ideology, not, you know, a long list of what they aren't going to do. Protect us from more regulation and taxes, which I don't want more regulation. I don't want more taxes. And I support Prop 13, by the way. What we need is somebody that is focused on the issues and committed to results, not more rhetoric. And I know that that's me, and I hope that I have your support. And I encourage everybody here to come out and vote in June, in June 5th. Thank you very much.
Okay, hold on. Thank you, Ms. Compton.
So thank you again, Latino Outreach, the League of Women Voters, and all of you people who have come here tonight to listen to the candidates. I'm running on my record over the last 3.5 years. I believe I have the knowledge to get things done that are important to my constituents. What's important to us isn't necessarily what's important to other supervisors, so you need somebody watching out for you. I'd like to ask you, do you want a supervisor who will get things done that are important to you, or do you want one that will be the swing vote of the board the other way, as no doubt my opponent will be? On virtually every issue we have spoken about, his talking points are exactly the same as the two other supervisors on the board who are currently in the minority, whether it comes to water basins, community choice aggregation, taxes, how we go about making more affordable housing. Look at his websites. We have screenshots from his websites. On the issues, his website has the exact wording, the exact paragraph used on Supervisor Gibson's website. That isn't by chance. I love living here in this community and have been here for 20-plus years. I've loved raising my girls here with our rural quality of life. I've been a contributing individual to this community, both in a financial sense, supporting our economy with our business that operates here and in the surrounding areas, and compensating long-term employees, many of whom live in Napomo. I've also been involved with local activities and organizations over the last 20 years from being here, not just joining them once I decided to run for office. I'm proud to sit here before you tonight with a long list of endorsements from both sides of the fence. Endorsements are important because they show my ability to work with key individuals in the community and to get things done and accomplished, and that these individuals have faith in me. Some of my endorsements include almost all safety organizations: Cal Fire, Aurora Grande Police Officers Association, retired Chief Annibale, retired sheriffs and the current police chiefs, etc. Former and current supervisors, mayors and elected officials, to name a few: Kacho Asajian, Ruth Brackett, Debbie Arnold, Frank Meacham, Jerry Lenthal, Tom Bordenauer, Mayor Ed Waage, and past mayors Shelley Higginbotham, Peter Keith, and many council members. My endorsements are on the right and on the left. One sworn deputy association, and these are the guys that protect our local communities. The Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, I believe I'm only one of three supervisors they've endorsed. The Council of Carpenters, the Napomo Chamber of Commerce, and over 1,000 other members of this community have endorsed me, almost half of which are small business owners who know personally how difficult it is to survive in this county. They're all listed on my website. They're not hidden. You can go look. Thank you for listening to me tonight. Know that I'm committed to working for you, and I'm asking you for your vote on or before June 5th. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to once again thank Natalie, John, and Anita for their volunteer, and thank the League of Women Voters. You've been a great audience.